Where did we come from? How did the universe come into being? Are we alone in the universe? All my life, I have sought to understand the universe.
Yeah. Bad boy, baby. Loon.
It's your turn now, Marco, here on Astro Talk. You're listening to Astro Talk, CITR's weekly astronomy talk show with your host, Marco.
Good afternoon, this is Marco back with you in Astro Talk. It's a new year, and I just came from somewhere different. And today we're going to talk about things like tarantulas. Big, bad tarantulas, but they're beautiful. So, nice to be back, and as you may know, I took a few weeks off before leaving for Christmas holidays because of an illness. So, I went to the Southern Hemisphere, was excited because I was hoping to see things that we could not see here in the Northern Hemisphere. So, some of the constellations and stars and things you look up in the night sky, they're different in the Southern Hemisphere than the Northern Hemisphere. So, I'm going to talk a little bit about that. And this new planet, well, is it a planet? Astronomers have found something that is linked with some of the objects in the Kuiper Belt. They plotted a assortment of orbits of objects in the Kuiper Belt, like Pluto, and they discovered there's something that's ordering the orbits of these objects. So is it a ninth planet? It is basically 10 times, 5 to 10 times bigger than Earth. It orbits very far away. They haven't seen it, but they've surmised its existence from the orbits of these other things. So is it a planet because Pluto was demoted a few years ago? After Pluto was demoted, many new planets were discovered in our solar system and in other solar systems and in other galaxies. So the plethora of planets, of new planets with their new properties, their orbits, and a lot of other things has led scientists to believe, or some of them to believe, there's a reordering in the future. We have to reclassify certain planets. Now there's a new planet, but could it be a planet? There could be another planet in our solar system. Researchers at Caltech in California, Pasadena, have found existence or evidence in the outer solar system of an object that could be a real planet. Its nickname is Planet 9, has a mass about 10 times that of the Earth, and orbits about 20 times farther from the Sun than Neptune, so that's very far. This means it could take the new planet somewhere between 10 to 20,000 years to make one full orbit around the Sun, so it's very far out. They haven't actually seen the planet, but because of the trajectories of how they think this planet could have an influence on the orbits or trajectory of items in the Kuiper Belt. The Kuiper Belt is like an asteroid belt, but it's much farther out. It's beyond Neptune. And because a certain pattern has been discovered in orbits in the Kuiper Belt of certain objects there, they have concluded that a planet is exerting the gravity necessary to shape the orbits of these objects in the Kuiper Belt. A astronomer, Konstantin Batygin, and Mike Brown from Caltech say, and quote, there have only been two true planets discovered since ancient times, and this would be a third. It's a pretty substantial chunk of our solar system that's still out there to be found, which is pretty exciting. So they haven't found it yet, but they surmise it existent. It says from the Caltech readout, or from the Caltech publication, they are pretty confident that Planet 9 is large enough to rule out any debate about whether it's a true planet, unlike Pluto, which got the boot in 2006. So Pluto got the boot because of certain reasons, probably because it wasn't big enough. Some people are mad that Pluto is not a planet anymore, but then if we do discover this new planet, then we could have nine planet again. It is a very big orbit. They predict it's highly elongated. So many telescopes have a shot at finding it. So this is from a news release from Caltech. So what else has happened in the world of astronomy since I've gone? Well, I went to Brazil and Uruguay. So that's in the southern hemisphere. So there's an object there that I'm trying to look at my notes, see the exact year. Something like 1519, a seaman from Spain, Ferdinand Magellan, he sailed south. This means he left Europe, which is in the northern latitudes, and when he left Europe, he headed south. What he saw in the sky was two big patches of stars, and it was about 500 years ago. So after, these patches were called the Large Magellanic Cloud and the Small Magellanic Cloud. So what are the Magellanic Clouds? They are two dwarf galaxies, irregular galaxies, that orbit the Milky Way. The Large Magellanic Cloud is believed to be right now about 190,000 light years from Earth or so, something like that, 160 to 190. Its orbit varies, so it's an elliptical orbit. And 250 million years ago, it was 150,000 light years from the Milky Way. So it orbits in an ellipse, and it is being ripped apart. The Milky Way, with its large amount of galaxy, is shredding the Large Magellanic Cloud. So as the Large Magellanic Cloud orbits the Milky Way, stars are ripped from it. There are big patches of stars and gas trailing the Large Magellanic Cloud, as well as the Small Magellanic Cloud. Because the Milky Way rips like the Moon, which has tidal forces that operate on Earth, the Milky Way, with its tidal forces, exerting its tidal forces, rips stars from the Large Magellanic Cloud. It orbits once around the Milky Way per 1.5 billion years. So 250 million years ago, it was at its closest approach of 120,000 light years from the Milky Way. It's being distorted by the gravity of the Milky Way, and its stars are being ripped from it and shredded. So within, who knows, it could be billions of years, it will be a part of the Milky Way. So will the Small Magellanic Cloud. So why is the Large Magellanic Cloud important, or the Small Magellanic Cloud? Well, as I just mentioned, Ferdinand Magellan, when he made his voyage from Europe around, I believe, is the Cape of Good Hope, he saw these two patches in the sky. He didn't name them the Magellanic Cloud, but I believe 400 years after that, they were named the Magellanic Clouds in his honor. So they are misfit galaxies being pulled out of shape, and they will one day collide with the Milky Way. So I was in Brazil, and I was eager to look in the sky and see this Large Magellanic Cloud. I also went to Uruguay, below Brazil, and every night I looked up in the sky, I found a dark area wherever I was, a light in the grass, and I looked for these clouds. The Large Magellanic Cloud is a galaxy in its own, so it's not a cloud, it's a galaxy. And it is supposed to be 10 times bigger in the night sky than the Moon. So when I first went to Brazil, I was in São Paulo, and with all the clouds and the pollution, couldn't see anything. So when I went to Uruguay, found a nice patch of grass, laid down, I couldn't see it. I couldn't spot the Large Magellanic Cloud. So I was in Uruguay for 4 days, couldn't see the Large Magellanic Cloud or the Small Magellanic Cloud, which was disappointing because we cannot see it in the Northern Hemisphere. So I did notice something in Uruguay that was odd. I could see the Orion Nebula, the Orion Constellation. And the Orion Constellation is very prominent in the sky with its three stars as its belt. But when I looked below the belt, I could not see the Orion Nebula. And I was thinking, okay, so this is why I cannot see the Large Magellanic Cloud, because the sky is cloudy and they have to be a clearer sky to see them. But then one thing I did notice when I finally looked again at the Orion Nebula, it was upside down. So in the Orion Nebula here, the nebula is below the belt, and there's 2 feet of the Orion. It's the Orion Nebula traces out the belt area, which is in the middle, 3 stars, 2 stars on the top, which are the shoulders, the left and right shoulder, and 2 stars on the bottom that are very prominent, very easily seen. These are the feet. So when I looked at the feet, I couldn't see the Orion Nebula. And it was perplexing because I thought that is why I could not see the Large Magellanic Cloud. But then I noticed, I didn't know this before, I should have because I've been an astronomer for 25 years, the Orion Nebula was flipped around. So I noticed, or I learned that, I didn't read this in a textbook, I learned it from looking at the sky. The constellations are flipped upside down in the Southern Hemisphere. Now, I wouldn't have thought that happened, and in a way you can say, okay, on one side it's one way, and if it's on the other side, it's like looking in a mirror, it's flipped around. So the Orion Nebula was flipped around, and the Orion constellation was flipped, and the nebula was on the other side. So I could see the Orion Nebula, but I could not see the Large Magellanic Cloud. So that was one of the disappointments of my trip into the Southern Hemisphere. So now I'm going to talk about the types of galaxies. We have very many types of galaxies. There is a classification of galaxies and a simple classification, which I'm going to work on. And there's a much more complicated classification, which maybe classifies galaxies into 10, 9, or 11 different types of galaxies. The photo or the picture that does this makes it look like a tuning fork. So I don't have that. I just have 3 types of galaxies. One's a spiral. That's our Milky Way. It's a flat white disk with a yellowish bulge at the center. The disk is filled with cool gas and dust interspersed with hotter ionized gas, and usually display bright spiral arms. So that is our Milky Way. The second type of galaxy is an elliptical. It's redder, more rounder, and often elongated like a football. Compared with spiral galaxies, elliptical galaxies contain less cool gas and dust, though they often contain very hot ionized gas. And then there's irregulars. These are the Large Magellanic Cloud is an example, as is the Small Magellanic Cloud. So the Magellanic Cloud are separated by about, I believe, 80,000 light years. I believe they rotate in the same orbit around. They basically orbit together around the Milky Way. I believe they do. I'm not 100% sure. And they are 22 degrees apart in the sky. So they can be seen from the southern hemisphere, not from the northern. Okay, so what's the difference between a spiral, elliptical, and irregular? Okay, so spirals look white, contain stars of all different colors and ages. Ellipticals look redder because they are old, reddish stars, produce much of their light. Now, irregulars, they have no real shape. That's why they're called irregular. They appear neither disc-like nor rounded. So that is what the Large Magellanic Cloud is. I'm going to pause for a second, and after I come back, I'll talk a little bit more about the Large Magellanic Cloud, the Small Magellanic Cloud, and my trip to the Southern Hemisphere. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on 101.9.
Hey! Why so sad?
Oh, nothing, really.
Not very convincing, Jane girl. Whatever it is, I've got just the cure for it.
One, two, three! Four, just one. Did you know CITR has a women's collective? This brand new collective is all about providing and fostering a community for women who are or who want to be in radio, fighting the gender disparity in media, and centering women's voices and issues. If you are a female-identified person or ally who's already involved in radio or wants somewhere to start, this collective is for you. Email womenscollective@citr.ca for more information and to get involved. And tune in Friday at 6 p.m. for the collective show, Lady Radio, featuring music, interviews, events, news, commentary, basically anything we care to talk about. See you then.
Well, how do you like it? There's only one.
Tune into Post Rock Friday from 10 to 11 with your host John P for the best in post rock, drone, ambient, experimental, and noise.
Welcome back. This is Marco on CITR, and we're talking about galaxies. Right now, I was talking about irregular galaxies because I was in South America, in Brazil, and Uruguay. I was hoping to see something that's very prominent in the sky there. It's supposed to be bigger in area than the moon is, but I did not see them. These are called the Large Magellanic Cloud and the Small Magellanic Cloud, named after Ferdinand Magellan. By the way, a lady astronomer discovered more things about the Magellanic Clouds, and I will talk about that in a few minutes. But what is an irregular galaxy? Well, irregular galaxies are galaxies, you can say, that fall into neither classification as a spiral or as an elliptical. So that's how we can classify irregular galaxies. They are a miscellaneous class of galaxy encompassing small galaxies such as the Magellanic Cloud. And they are large, peculiar galaxies that appear to be in disarray. They have a white, dusty color. They contain a lot of young, massive stars. One thing that's prominent in the Large Magellanic Cloud is something called the Tarantula Nebula. It's bigger than the Orion Nebula by a long shot. It would cast shadows on the Earth if it was 1,500 light years from Earth. The Orion Nebula is 1,500 light years from Earth. So if we put the Tarantula Galaxy there, the Tarantula Nebula, it's in the Large Magellanic Cloud, which is the irregular galaxy rotating around the Milky Way, it would cast a shadow on Earth. They are distant galaxies that are very large are more likely to be irregular than nearby galaxies. So the light from these distant galaxies take longer to reach us. So that would lead to the conclusion that irregular galaxies were more common in the early universe. So if we can see a lot of irregular galaxies in the early universe, that means that, or if we can see a lot of irregular galaxies in that are distances far away from us, that are very far, like billions of light years away, we can conclude that irregular galaxies were more common in the early Milky Way. So there's the name. Okay, I was going to talk about an important discovery made in the Small Magellanic Cloud. So, again, the Small Magellanic Cloud is the twin brother, not the twin, it's one-tenth the mass of the Large Magellanic Cloud, so it's a little brother or a little sister galaxy to the Large Magellanic Cloud that rotate around our Milky Way. It's one-tenth as mass, so it has a lot less stars, and it is not as bright as the Small Magellanic Cloud, or the Large Magellanic Cloud, but an astronomer, Henrietta Leavitt, a lady astronomer, made an important discovery in the Small Magellanic Cloud. She unlocked the secret of the galactic timescale. Astronomers are always searching for ways to refine their measurements on things, and for example, the Andromeda Galaxy, Sir Edwin Hubble, when he made his announcements and his figures public, he made approximations for the distance of the Andromeda Galaxy to our Milky Way, and his measurements were off. And after that, astronomers kept trying to unlock the secret of the galactic timescale. So they were trying to get more accurate ways to measure distance scales in our galaxy. One way is a time, is a Doppler shift of the light. So if a galaxy is very far away, its light will be redshifted a large amount. They can make measures on these things. So this can tell how far something is away from us. But Henrietta Leavitt made a discovery using Cepheid variable stars. So a Cepheid variable star, it pulsates in brightness, and astronomers believe that Cepheid variables in, for example, the Milky Way, or the Small Magellanic Cloud, or even the most distant galaxies, they should behave the same throughout the universe. So variables concerning their pulsation rates, the period of their pulsation, if we can measure this, and we can make determinations of how far this Cepheid variable star is in this distant galaxy. Because if they are supposed to behave the same throughout the universe, they're the brightest, they pulsate between their brightest and their dimmest. So if we measure the Cepheid variable at its brightest, and we can compare that to Cepheid variables in the Milky Way. And the amount of brightness, it could be a ratio that could tell us how far this Cepheid variable is. And if the Cepheid variable star is in another galaxy, astronomers can determine how far this galaxy is. So Henrietta Leavitt unlocked the secret of galactic timescale by making measurements of Cepheid variables stars in the Small Magellanic Cloud. So the Large Magellanic Cloud, like the Small Magellanic Cloud, undergo intense star formation. There's a book I have at home. It's a three-book volume called Burnham's Celestial Handbook. Okay, Burnham's Celestial. It's a three-volume, it's a classic, three-volume treatment on all information pertaining to stars, galaxies, and things like that in the universe. So when I was looking at this book, I think it was published in the mid-60s. I think I could take a lot of what it said as the truth, even though 50 years have passed since that book has been published. The Small and Large Magellanic Cloud, there are things that were known then that are known now, and we've discovered more things, but a lot of the information I got in this article was from Burnham's Celestial Handbook, because other books didn't have much on the Large Magellanic Cloud. Okay, so both the Large and Small Magellanic Cloud are doomed to be torn to shreds by the Milky Way. They have survived several close passes of the Milky Way. So the Large Magellanic Cloud passes within 150,000 light years of Earth, of the Milky Way, and I believe it's an elongated orbit around the Milky Way, so I'm not sure why planets and everything orbit in an elongated ellipse, but they do. So what has happened as it has orbited around the Milky Way and has made several close passes of the Milky Way, a trail of gas, dust, and stars have been torn away during previous encounters. So I believe there's even a trail of gas and dust that connects the Large and the Small Magellanic Cloud. This is called the Magellanic Stream. It has allowed astronomers to trace and refine their models for the orbits of the Small and Large Magellanic Cloud. A book I bought recently called the Smithsonian, it's from the Smithsonian Institute. I got it at Chapters. It was $50 US, but they also sold it for 50 Canadian, so it was quite a deal. So this gave a stat as the Large Magellanic Cloud being 179,000 light years from our Milky Way. So that is the same measurement that the Burnham Celestial Handbook gave. And it is in the southern sky, not visible to Western Europe. So when Ferdinand Magellan made his round-the-world voyage in 1519 to 1521, he was the first European to record these two isolated patches of the Milky Way. The large magical inner cloud from the Earth appears to be a distinctive isolated region of the Milky Way with its own areas of nebulosity, but it's not an area of the Milky Way. It's outside the Milky Way. And it came within 120,000 light years of Earth, of the Milky Way, 250 million years ago. So the reason I was so eager to see this Magellanic cloud is, I think in the mid-1990s here on our planet Earth, I bought a nice little telescope, and I could isolate the Andromeda Galaxy high up in the sky. It was very vague, but when I aimed my telescope, it was a beautiful thing. I could see the large Magellanic Cloud, and I went on Grouse Mountain one night, and I could view it even better. So I saw the Andromeda Galaxy. So I've been interested in seeing things like nebulas and other galaxies, because it's so easy to see stars. We can see the Orion Nebula with our naked eye here from the northern hemisphere. But so this was going to be a treat for me to see the Large Magellanic Cloud, which I didn't see. So it has a lot of stars. Unlike our Milky Way, the stars in the Large Magellanic Cloud seem to be undergoing a lot of intense star formation. So there's lots of star formation. The Large Magellanic Cloud, like all irregular galaxies, are rich in gas, dust, and young stars, including some of the largest known regions of starbirth. Some of the supergiants that are in the Large Magellanic Cloud are bigger than the supergiants here on Earth, the red supergiant stars. So I made my trip, and one thing that was great, in 1987, there was the first supernova exploded in 4 centuries that were visible from Earth. The explosion released energy in the form mostly of neutrinos. So there was a burst of neutrinos seen after this explosion. So after that, more neutrino telescopes were built because of the explosion of supernova 1987A from the Large Magellanic Cloud. So this is Marco. You have been listening to AstroTalk. I am back. So hopefully next week I can talk about a different topic. But today I was talking about my trip to the south and hopefully being able to see things from the south that I could not see here. So thank you for listening. Have a good day.
This is going out to the whole wide west side. Know what I'm saying? Yeah. Break it down for me. Steady mobbing, rock, rock on. I was just a young boy living in the hub city. Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had every talking about, boy, you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Too short, bumped in every super's boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast. My people singing, baby, where you at? Throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Started tripping, so it's time to go out to the park with the locusts.